This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 19th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, part three in our series, World War II Central Illinois Stories, we'll look at two Central Illinois men who had to choose between their country's call and their church's teachings. And we'll have a look at the weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. New regulations aimed at curbing binge drinking at bars was narrowly defeated by the Champaign City Council last night. Opponents of the measure say the new rules would have caused more problem drinking, not less. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
New regulations that passed easily in a July study session failed to win a council majority last night, perhaps due to the lobbying done by Frank Calabrese. The U of I student senator brought about 70 fellow students with him to the city council meeting. His main target was a proposal to limit private parties at bars. Calabrese said the private parties wouldn't stop, they'd just move to students' apartments, where there would be no bar staff to supervise them and more potential for liquor abuse.
Fights break out. Sexual assault's a problem. Real binge drinking takes place. And people many times have to drive to get to these places, where DUIs are a problem.
Those arguments clearly upset Mayor Jerry Schweihart. He says the proposals would still allow private parties, but they would have to follow rules conforming to the state happy hour law.
The only two things it means is, number one, they have to have a contract. Number two, they have to have a uniform price throughout the entire establishment.
Councilman Mike Ledoux, who voted no, says he could still support the proposals in some form and expects them to return to council at a later date. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The water supply is becoming a concern in Decatur after a few weeks of dry weather. The city says Lake Decatur, the city's main drinking water source, is nearly 2 feet below its normal level. And more dry weather in the forecast has led the city to tap into a backup supply, a well field in DeWitt County. Decatur's Director of Water Management, Keith Alexander, says the shortage is reviving calls to dig a second lake to serve as an alternate water supply in times like these.
Our plan with this new lake is to fill the new lake with Sangamon River water when we have excess water in the Sangamon River. And then during dry periods, when there is low to almost no flow in the Sangamon like there is today, we're able to tap into two large pools of water, Lake Decatur and the new lake.
But Alexander says a new lake would be nearly a decade in the making. In the short term, he says industrial customers and other major water users like Millikan University and the Park District have cut back on their usage. Alexander says if Lake Decatur levels fall another 10 inches, the city would have to enact mandatory conservation for the first time since 1988. Illinois senators voted last night to spend billions of dollars on construction projects across the state, and they want to expand gambling to pay for it. Amanda Vinicky has more.
Chicago's ailing mass transit system. Roads, bridges, and schools sorely in need of repair. More money for education. Each of these would be funded in the plan approved on a bipartisan vote in the Senate and brokered with Governor Rod Blagojevich. It would all be paid for by three new casinos, one in Chicago and two in undecided locations. Senate President Emil Jones.
Those who want bridge repair must be willing to vote for a revenue stream to get it done. If you're not going to vote for a revenue stream, don't complain.
But critics say gambling's an immoral way to raise revenue. Others are angry that it pushes off fixing Chicago's public transportation problems. Some legislators say those concerns don't matter, as they predict it's dead on arrival in the Illinois House. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Although many Republicans went along with the infrastructure and gambling plan, they had initially been wary. They feared that Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich would eventually renege on the deal and hold up construction projects in GOP areas. Republican Senator Larry Bomke of Springfield says that happened to him. Bomke says that's why he voted no.
Quite honestly, the governor doesn't have a great deal of credibility. His word doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. So members who voted for it, thinking they're going to get something out of the capital program based on his commitment, I think are foolish. I don't think it'll happen.
A spokesman for Senate Republican leader Frank Watson says every precaution was taken to make sure Blagojevich follows through with the deal. For instance, Blagojevich signed contract-like documents known as Memorandums of Understanding. They are meant to guarantee in writing that Blagojevich will fund the projects listed in the proposal. Also, the legislation limits how long the governor has to release the project money. If he waits longer than 2 years, his power to authorize spending will expire. The governor yesterday refused to explain the thinking behind his decision to give a high-ranking state job to a man who spent 23 months in prison. But Blagojevich's office did say the governor's staff doesn't contain any other convicted felons. Last week, the Chicago Sun-Times reported Stephen Guerra was imprisoned in the mid-1980s. Guerra had refused to testify before a grand jury about terrorist activities by the Puerto Rican independence movement known as FALN. Guerra is Blagojevich's chief of staff for community services. The Associated Press asked whether Blagojevich had named any other felons to high-level posts. The administration initially refused to answer, but spokeswoman Abby Ottenhoff later said no other top officials have felony records. A lab in Champaign run by Illinois' Environmental Protection Agency will be closing its doors. The facility, which provides testing of municipal-owned water systems, is closing October 31st, putting 17 employees out of work. Agency spokeswoman Maggie Carson says the market for the water tests has become more competitive, and local governments are finding it more cost-effective to use private labs. But the president of the Illinois Municipal League says there's a greater reason for the lab closure. Ken Alderson says state funds committed to the testing program have continually gone down.
Basically, EPA was running out of money, and they had to increase the fee to be able to do the testing. As they started increasing the fee, then the private labs were able to come in and, I would presume, in some instances, reduce their fees. But in any event, why the state ended up having much higher fees than what private labs had.
Alderson says he expects the state EPA's water testing program to be phased out in the near future. An employee of the Champaign lab is leading an informational picket to call attention to the closure tomorrow. AFSCME Local 2971 President Becky Harden also says the closure is due to a lack of state funding. Any remaining work through the Champaign EPA lab will be moved to the agency's Springfield office. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. In the third part of our series, World War II, Central Illinois Stories, we look at two Central Illinois men who had to choose between their country's call and their church's teachings. These men were members of historic peace denominations that preach against military service. As AM 580's Jim Meadows reports, these two men made two different decisions.
Merlin Tabor of Champaign and Delbert Augsburger of Flanagan have a lot in common. Now in their 80s, they both grew up on Midwestern farms. Tabor near Cedar Rapids in Iowa, and Augsburger in central Illinois. They were both raised in historic peace churches that discouraged military service, Tabor as a Quaker and Augsburger as a Mennonite. And in 1944, they were both drafted. Merlin Tabor had already filed for conscientious objector status.
I decided that the argument against killing other human beings was a very sound argument logically. And while I was not sure that I could be nonviolent in every situation, I thought, I'm opposed to taking up arms. So I asked for CO status.
And that's how Tabor, upon being drafted, came to join the civilian public service. About 12,000 conscientious objectors performed non-military service in the CPS during World War II. But the public at large didn't have much respect for them. And Tabor knew that if he left the CPS camp for a weekend visit to the nearest town, he couldn't expect a warm welcome.
A very cold. We didn't try to go there too often. I was given a very strange haircut once because the barber found out I was at the CPS camp. So he butchered up my haircut as a means of supporting the war.
That incident happened in North Dakota, where Tabor's duties included building roads and irrigation ditches. Later, he helped fight forest fires in Southern California, was infected with jaundice as part of a medical experiment in Philadelphia, and finally worked as an attendant at Philadelphia's infamous Byberry Mental Hospital.
I was assigned to the violent building. This had 150 or 200 men, each of whom usually had attacked attendants or other patients repeatedly or who had escaped repeatedly.
Tabor says the patients spent most of their time in a huge day room with nothing to do.
And there were two of us young, naive CO people at one end of the room, and we put a row of benches across the room and told the men they couldn't come across the benches. And we stood there and watched what was happening. And then we would go, one of us would go, or two if needed, to break up fights, which broke out all day long.
Tabor says the poor conditions at Byberry left such an impression on him that he decided he wanted to work for better treatment of the mentally ill. This led to an academic career in the field of social work, including a quarter century at the University of Illinois' School of Social Work. He's now a professor emeritus. Delbert Augsburger says quite a few of his friends became conscientious objectors like Merlin Tabor, but while doing so himself would have been in keeping with his Mennonite upbringing, he says his father never pressed the matter. When his draft notice arrived, Delbert Augsburger signed up with the Army Air Forces. He says he found support for his decision in the Gospels, where the Pharisees asked Jesus whether they should pay tribute to Caesar.
He looked at the coin, and the coin must be something like the coin we have now, like we have in God We Trust on the one side and the picture of the present. And he showed the picture, and he said, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and the things to God the things that are God," and turn the other side of the coin. So I thought that right there was a commandment, you know, that whatever the government asked you to do, that was a thing you should do.
Factors influencing Delbert's decision included his five brothers, most of whom also chose military service when they were drafted. Plus, the Air Force gave Delbert a chance to fulfill a boyhood dream of becoming an aviator. Still, upon arriving at Jefferson Barracks in St. Louis, he was confronted by a grim reminder of the duty ahead.
When I went through the first door, the big sign on the door said, "Kill or be killed." You know, and that kind of gives you a jolt right there. That's the only time we realized how serious what you was getting into.
Augsburger was sent to an airbase at Basingbourne, England. From there, Sergeant Augsburger flew 23 bombing missions over Europe as a crew member on a B-17 Flying Fortress. On bombing missions, he spent hours curled inside a ball turret, a compartment on the plane's underbelly that left no room for a parachute. Augsburger's job was to shoot at attacking planes, but he says it never actually came to that.
But a couple times I was ready to, and in fact, I was there late enough in the war that I seen the first jet that Sherman set up. He come up into our formation, and nobody knew what it was until we read later on that they had these fighters, but he never fired. Well, we didn't have a chance to fire at him anyhow.
While Augsburger never fired a shot in combat, he did participate in the dropping of bombs on German targets, and sometimes he worried about unintended civilian casualties.
And in fact, it bothered the officers, briefing officers that morning, because this was towards the end of the war and the civilians were trying to get out of Berlin. And they actually told us there would be a lot of casualties, civilian casualties, because of the bombing that railroad yard and all the civilians. And I don't know how many thousands was killed. I know about it and get all worked up about it, but this is something that happens in war.
Augsburger's combat duty ended with a close call. On his 23rd mission, two of his plane's four engines were shot out and they had to limp back to the airbase. Soon after that, the war in Europe was over, and Augsburger returned to central Illinois. He went back to civilian work, eventually opening up his own heating and air conditioning business, and he married his high school sweetheart, Betty Jo. But the Mennonite Church had not forgotten Delbert's decision to defy their teachings against military service.
But I think it was just before we got married, the minister come around and have a paper to sign to make it right with the congregation so you could get back into full membership. Well, I said, you know, at the time, I did agree that I did go against the teaching of the church, but not because I thought it was wrong, you know. I signed it. My wife never liked it too good that I did sign that. But I never went back to the church after that. I joined the Methodist Church.
60 years after World War II, Delbert Augsburger and Merlin Tabor continue to hold different views about war. Augsburger believes that the U.S. must use its military strength to ensure peace. He says that's especially true since the attacks of September 11th.
Because so many more people are against us, and we don't know how to fight them, because I really think our future generations are going to be fighting the same war that we are now.
Merlin Tabor says he was pretty naive when he filed for conscientious objector status more than 60 years ago. But he did it again during the Korean War, and his opposition continues today when it comes to the war in Iraq.
But I have to say it's partly on religious grounds, and it's partly on the grounds that human life is sacred, but it's also on the grounds that war is self-defeating and violence is always self-defeating.
But Tabor says he remains undecided about how deep his pacifism really goes. In college, not long after the war, he was shown pictures of the death camps for the first time, and he wondered if he should have been fighting the Nazis after all. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
In the forecast for East Central Illinois, intervals of clouds and sunshine, a chance of a passing shower or thunderstorm this afternoon, a high 86. A slight chance of a passing shower or thunderstorm tonight, or otherwise partly cloudy, the low 61. Partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, the high 88. Tomorrow night mostly clear, the low around 60. And mostly sunny Friday, the high around 90 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Wednesday, September 19th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.